This is the new talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Podcast 511, the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show number 30. I just want to say a couple things about this show very quickly. This show is designed for radio stations to move around because it's an hour long and it's designed to fit in between different programming that they have on the weekends especially. And the Patriot in Minneapolis and St. Paul at 1280 has had the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show on at 5 p.m. on Saturdays, then 4 p.m. on Saturdays. Now it's at a new time, 4 p.m. on Sundays, which is why I am also posting it here at the BobDavisPodcasts.com. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as we progress through the segments for this week's show. So down in the bunker, it's actually evening. So usually I do this when I wake up in the morning on Friday morning, but I had a bunch of stuff to do this Friday. So went out for dinner, came back, and it's night late, and definitely time to get this thing posted and up for you guys so you can listen to the radio show in clean, clear digital sound when you choose to. So as you'll hear in this show, I headed out to South Dakota this week to cover the last primary. I don't need to belabor that because you're going to hear all about it in this show. But another thing that I did was I took, I guess it was 3 or 4 days off of yoga, which I almost never, ever, ever do. And I want to tell you why I took a few days off. And that is because I have been pushing it so hard that I was really ready for a break. Why do I do that? And when I say pushing it hard, it's doing yoga twice a day, some days more than once in a week. It's doing yoga sculpts, which is yoga with weights. It's doing very high energy or very hot yoga in hot rooms with lots of people sweating a lot. And how is it that I can do this at my age? Well, part of it is just experience doing yoga, but the other part of it is that until I found Hydrus, it was hard. I was sore a lot, even if I would take a class one day and another class the next day and so forth. I just would go ahead and work through the pain. The problem with that is you don't really progress in your practice. It takes longer. Because I was dehydrated. And then I found Hydrus. Hydrus is a high-performance beverage. It's brand new. It uses exclusive nanosome technology that gets critical electrolytes into your muscles with unrivaled speed, a lot faster than when you're hydrating with just water. And there is no sugar in Hydrus, so it's really great because you don't have to worry about all the sugar that you get in these traditional sports drinks. And this is why I say Hydrus helps me take it to the edge. And it will help you do that regardless of what you do. Cycle, CrossFit, lift, do competitive sports. A friend of mine has been using Hydrus and he rides a recumbent bike. And he has been riding that thing like 100 miles every day or every other day, which really wasn't possible for him before he started using Hydrus because you're fully hydrated and you're not sore. And that way the next day you can just go out there and hit it again. I'm telling you, the CrossFit people who are probably the best judge of this because they hit it really hard can do these CrossFit competitions and then go back and start training the next day, within reason. They're not really, really sore. So if you want to know more, join the Performance Hydration Revolution. Visit HYDRUS HydrusPerformance.com. That's HYDRUS HydrusPerformance.com. All right, here is segment number one of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Thanks for finding it. This is the kind of show, being an hour long, that radio stations use to move around between different kinds of programming on their weekends. And so we get moved around occasionally on some of the affiliates. So if you couldn't find us or lost us, now you have found the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show again. And welcome. What is the mission of this show? Why would you call a show show a name like the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. Now, anybody who knows me and listens to the podcast and knows about me knows that I have a lot of radio experience on air and off air. These days, though, I introduce myself as a podcaster. And I feel like I need to, at the beginning of every show, kind of explain for people who are new initiates or have not been initiated to podcasting, I have to explain what a podcast is. A podcast is nothing more than audio on demand delivered over the internet. About 21% of the public, many of us think actually a lot more than that, listen to audio on demand or podcasts these days. Now, I've been podcasting since 2009, back when it was actually still pretty primitive, with over 500 podcasts available now at thebobdavispodcast.com. And one of the things that I learned about podcasting is that it is a different medium from radio, and that there's a lot of content in podcasts that you don't hear on the radio because of time constraints and a lot of other reasons. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to do a radio show that brings content from podcasts back to the radio. So the mission of this show is to do that. So if you've listened to me, if you listen to the Bob Davis podcast, you know that I talk about all kinds of things from travel and adventure, you know, yes, and including politics, but a lot more. And, you know, I'm kind of I have lots of different interests. And of course, these days, I find myself less and less interested in politics. So I'm talking about and trying to talk about other things as well, although I still get into politics on the podcast. Now, on the political front, because we're going to do this is going to be a pretty political show this week, just because we're coming to the end of the primary season. I think there's one more primary next week, which I'll talk about in a second here. But in politics, I started out the year covering the presidential preference primary season by hitting the road in a 2004 diesel Super Duty ambulance, which has been repurposed as a mobile recording studio to cover the 2016 primary race. Now, people ask me, well, is it still an ambulance? Yes, I didn't take any of the ambulance stuff out other than we cut the braces that hold the gurney. You know, in the ambulance, so that's gone. So there's no more gurney in the ambulance. And sometimes I think, you know, I should have kept it because it would have been easier to sleep on. So yeah, it's still an ambulance inside. It still looks like an ambulance inside, but it turns out to be a great studio. So I started covering the presidential race last summer with the announcement by Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker that he was going to be making a presidential bid. And then it ended just this last week for me in South Dakota, which, among other states, held its primary on June 7th. Now, certainly all eyes and ears have been focused on California, where Bernie Sanders made his pretty much his last electoral stand against Hillary Clinton. Yes, I know that there are other primaries. I'm going to talk about it in a second. Yet to come, some territorial primaries and caucuses. But for the most part, everybody was watching California. And I think I said last week that if Bernie Sanders won California, then it would be a different kind of race. Well, you see what happens. He did not win California. And so now presumptive is a word that you hear in front of the name Hillary Clinton. And of course, this was a week in which President Obama, you know, came out strongly for her and blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't even want to engage in this play-by-play stuff because everybody knows what's going on. There's no need for me to do that. And that's one of the things that's different about talk radio these days is that you don't have to tell people every little thing that's happening because they already know. Because if you're online, you know, which I've actually started doing more of, looking at stuff on my phone, and, you know, you don't need to know every little thing. So it's really more discussing the effects or reaction to the things that are going on. But I decided to go to South Dakota rather than California. I mean, I could have gone to California. It would have been a long trip. But I decided to go to South Dakota because it's another Midwestern, and actually, I would have to say, west of the Missouri, mostly a Western state. It borders Iowa, you know, and of course, Iowa is where it all began back in February. And yes, as I said before, there's one more primary and a couple of territorial votes yet to come. The primary is in Washington, D.C., which is, by the way, a territory, right? But for all intents and purposes, the primary race, as I said, ended with the California, Montana, New Mexico, New Jersey, and South Dakota primary on June 7th. So really now, you have to prepare yourselves for the onslaught of the paid pundits and the plugola television and gas baggers who seemed to, and it happened almost immediately. It was just shocking to me how many columns and commentaries appeared out of nowhere telling us who's going to win and why they're going to win. No, this one's going to win. No, that one's going to win. Battling columns about who's going to win and why, electoral this and electoral that, before anybody gets a chance to even think about who they want to vote for. As one South Dakotan put it to me, we now have a choice between someone who's going to get us into a war and someone who's going to rob us blind. And I said, yeah, the question is which one? And honestly, I can't think of anything less interesting or less enjoyable than now what is going to be the presidential popular vote race. Keep in mind, it is an electoral race, and there's going to be plenty of time to talk about that. But, you know, even though we are electing all of the U.S. Congress and one-third of the Senate, as well as a host of local elections, which, by the way, when I was in South Dakota, I saw very few campaign signs for presidential candidates. Almost all of them were for, in fact, all of them that I saw, and I'm sure that there were presidential candidate signs, but all the signs I saw were for people that were running for endorsement for the Senate and state offices in South Dakota. So the attention may perhaps at some point turn to these hosts of local elections, Congress and the Senate, but for the time being, everybody wants to tell you who's going to win the popular vote to the presidential election. This week on the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, I want to focus on attempts to cast Donald Trump as either a fascist, or now the latest is that he is the heir to a legacy of rich racist presidents like Zachary Taylor. Who? Yeah, Zachary Taylor. To cover the final primary, as I said, I didn't go just to South Dakota. I drove 500 miles from the Twin Cities to Deadwood. Deadwood, with its casinos and rich Western history, appealed to me for a lot of reasons. But I wasn't sure I was going to stay there. And then I got a message and found out that I have an old friend who moved to Deadwood from Minneapolis and now lives in the historical district of Deadwood, which is pretty much the whole town. But there's one section that is a historic preservation district. So I was like, I'm coming right over. And I decided to interview this self-taught historian about the history of his adopted new town of Deadwood. It proved to be actually a wonderful and welcome distraction from the nonsense you normally hear in media about elections. Coming up, the paid-off pundits and plugola political players want you to believe all sorts of things about Donald Trump. Next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, go to thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. Back in the studio, just ahead of segment two, I just want to mention somebody sent me a really nice note through the BobDavisPodcast.com site, the email thing there that said, "Hey, I really like listening to your new radio show on the radio. I don't have access to the tools so that I can listen to podcasts or the radio show online, but it's great to hear you again on the radio." Well, this is why I'm doing the radio show, because I think there certainly are a lot of people listening to podcasts and listening to this radio show online, as a podcast. But there are a lot of people who just don't have access to that stuff, and this is one of the reasons I'm doing the radio show. So we're just ahead of segment two. One of the biggest challenges for growing businesses is how to show clients how much they're appreciated. Now, I'm a small businessman, and I know many people who are small business owners, and I know that you guys know this because we all struggle with this, and that is figuring out ways to tell your clients how much they mean to you. It's easy for me because I can do a whole podcast where I just thank all the clients once or twice a year. And of course, we get together at different times because you've got to spend time to build relationships. And the problem is, you know, lunches or dinners aren't that special, to be quite honest. And in Minnesota, a lot of times guys go fishing or they'll golf or whatever. But when you have a lot of clients, what you need is something that's social and memorable and really kind of cool to help people sort of celebrate the relationship that you have with them as clients. And this is where Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park comes in. This is a unique, new, fun, social, and memorable way to socialize and bond with your clients who are engaged in creating something unique. And, you know, I mentioned last time I was talking about Brush, this is a diverse world. We have diverse people in business, you know, at companies, and we have a lot of diversity in terms of client base, and lots of people like different things, and this is something new and fun, and it's a no-pressure, fun way for people to be socializing in a relaxed atmosphere. What happens is an artist guides folks through a featured painting step-by-step. This is not paint by numbers. They actually paint a painting. And people come away amazed at what they're able to do. You do not need experience. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be an event. And basically, your clients are going to be amazed at what they're able to create. And while they're doing that and having fun, you can be circulating through and hanging out and talking to those guys and your clients and getting to know them. There's catering from Crave in the West End, which is always good. There's room for at least 55 people there. So if you have a medium-sized business, you know, or a large small business, you can get almost all of your clients in there. Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. Again, it is a fun, sophisticated way to create a new bonding experience that your clients will never forget. Actually, you'll probably never forget it, but I can tell you that they will love you for it. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page or visit brushstudios.net. You can reach out to Brush Studio 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. That link takes you to their homepage, and there's a video there that shows how much fun it is and exactly what they do. Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park. All right, let's go. Segment two. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcast, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcast's Radio Show. Welcome back. So these days, you have to listen very carefully, and you have to listen carefully to what is being said about Donald Trump. It's a scarcely veiled attempt to demonize the New York developer before the Republican convention in Cleveland this summer. A lot of people trying to explain the Trump phenomenon, which is silliness, and I mean these analysts. And the most silly of all of them is the Hitler comparisons. People saying things and people writing things offered as proof that Trump is some kind of Hitler in waiting and that we would be well served by warning the population and that somehow this is responsible and the responsible thing to do. This is just an add-on to the superstructure of the Trump as authoritarian reasoning that I talked about earlier in the year. It's always a nice way to call him a fascist. Now they're saying Hitler is experiencing a burst of interest, which is substantiated by what? It's substantiated by some polls in Europe and some sale of some books and movies in Europe as proof that suddenly there's a resurgence of Hitler and that people who are excited about a Trump candidacy are really all about fascism and fascists. And again, I would encourage people, if you're really interested in this, to look at the origins of fascism in Italy in the 1920s and Germany in the 1930s. Fascism's roots are not right wing. Its roots are socialism versus communism in a third way that is center left, not right, quote unquote, right wing. Conservatives at the time in the 1920s and 30s in Italy and Germany were for the continuation of democratic institutions in those countries, not fascism. It was essentially a center left third way between socialism and communism. And the conditions that predicate fascism are a complete failure of socialism. What does that look like? Well, it doesn't look like the United States under Barack Obama. I'm sorry to tell conservatives, quote unquote, conservatives in the United States. It looks like Venezuela. That's what a failure of socialism looks like. Brazil is seeing that. Venezuela is seeing that. And what will be the solution to that in Venezuela and Brazil? Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty simple. It will be the suspension of democratic institutions and the arrival of some sort of military coup. I think you're going to see it in Venezuela long before there's any kind of a democratic solution. A socialist breakdown predicates, especially in Latin America and places like that, the need for the military to step in as the one political institution that can be depended on to make the quote-unquote trains run on time, or literally to fill the shelves with product like toilet paper if it's necessary. But none of these facts stop the anti-Trump crowd from saying that he might not be Hitler or a fascist, but people supporting him act like the supporters of Hitler and fascists in the 1930s. Well, the conditions are completely different. Things may be one certain way in the United States, but we are hardly in the position of the Weimar Republic in 2016 in this country, regardless of the Barack Obama presidency. And by the way, La Raza and Black Lives Matter also act like fascists. Are they fascists? Meanwhile, and this is the part that really is interesting to me, the suicide of top media talkers continues. Everybody's heard about the Glenn Beck suspension by Sirius, which may or may not mean anything, but it was because Beck had a guest on talking about resorting to armed confrontation if Trump gets elected. And, you know, lest some of you tut, tut, tut about this, this is backed up by some of the comments that I've seen on Facebook and Twitter this week. And this is, how can I put this? There are some supporters of Ted Cruz who are very much of the opinion that he was the last best hope for the republic and the nation and the Christian way, and that now it is too late and the devil is going to take over and it's to the mattresses. And I've seen a number of these comments. I've heard a number of these comments. I used to hang up on people that said this on the radio because it's absolutely stupid. And I don't mean to mince words. These people are just really dumb. And I hesitate to add, but I'm going to, that if you're a Democrat, if you're a liberal, if you're a socialist, you have nothing to fear from mid-50s white men with their fat bellies, department store shotguns, and AR-15s. They would last about 3 days tromping around the forest. There is a reason why war is for the young, because it is really hard on your body. And aside from the fact that all of them think that they'll be lieutenant colonels in and generals in some ad hoc army that they'll command, nobody wants to be a lowly dog face who does the fighting. And if you look for proof, you need to look no further than the great militia takeover of the forestry facility in Oregon, and the fact that they ended up being apprehended because they had to go to the grocery store. So I'm sorry to laugh, but my God, people who think that we're going to have some sort of armed revolution because the candidate that you were supporting, and by the way, I'm not suggesting that all Ted Cruz supporters are like this, but some of them are, sincerely believe that the only step after this is now civil war. The good news is they're just not very smart at best, and that's being kind. So there's that. And then you have Sean Hannity, who can barely contain himself, sucking up to Trump with his wide-eyed suggestions in an interview. First of all, I'm voting for Trump, he has to tell everybody. And secondly, he suggested that Trump put everything down in writing, which is really idiotic because Donald Trump is not going to put anything in writing, and position papers or do any of that stuff on websites like Barack Obama did, that, the long and involved position papers that described his policy ideas. Because he wants to be able to maneuver and say, I never said that, or take it back, or not recall what he said, because he's entirely rhetorical. So it's so amusing me to see someone, to see someone like Sean Hannity interviewing Trump, telling him he's going to vote for him, and as though that means something to anyone, and then say, you really need to put everything that you're saying in writing. I mean, it's just beyond, it is pure comedy. But I reserve my greatest derision for William Kristol and the ill-fated third-party establishment candidacy of David French. Who? Yeah, David French, or someone else, that we can find, anyone else. And also Eric Erickson of the former Red State blog, which is now just the Black and Blue blog because he keeps tripping over his shoestrings and falling down the back stairs on his way out the door. Eric Erickson is now fully in Glenn Beck territory. He has what I refer to as talk radio cancer. This is an affliction of thinking that, number one, people are listening, and two, they actually care what you think. Watch these people, because they're in the process of laying the groundwork for an attack on the Trump majority at Cleveland this summer. Coming up, another favorite tactic of the paid prognosticators and plugola media is to equate candidates with past presidents. The latest comparison for Trump is a doozy. Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Back in the studio here at the Broadcast Bunker gives me a chance to thank the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast, Alpha Systems. You know, I've been talking about this for a long, long time. This, if you're a pilot, you know what this is. This is a visual indicator of your angle of attack, and it saves lives because it enables pilots to make sure they have enough lift when they're turning on the final approach to land. And there's a lot of pilots out there that aren't sure why they need to have this, and this is why I tell people to click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. It takes you to their website. There's a video there. There have been many lives saved by Alpha's AOA, and there's plenty of demonstration there. Once you see it, I think you'll see the value. Remember, Alpha Systems started the AOA revolution. Alpha Systems, and thanks, guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. All right, here's segment three. Hearing the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Welcome back. So I think one of the big stories of 2016 is going to be the complete failure of the media and journalism to actually report on anything real. So it's very interesting to me when I notice commentators trying to compare someone like Trump, who I don't support either way, to a past and ill-fated president. It's really not a good comparison. The latest attempt to equate Donald Trump with somebody who might be distasteful is the attempt by this historian on Politico, and I'm sorry because I'd have to look at my phone to get the guy's name, and I'm not going to do it, but it's a nice article. A lot of scare quotes, by the way, around words like you know, military leader, stuff like that, to describe the president, I think the 14th president of the United States, maybe 12th president of the United States, Zachary Taylor, who was from Kentucky. I thought he was from Virginia, but I guess Kentucky. Minnesotans will remember Taylor because Taylor was one of the generals, if not the, I guess he opened up Fort Snelling. So Taylor spent his entire military career, starting with the War of 1812, where he was a captain, in distinguished service, both in combat and also building those forts across the West, of which Fort Snelling was only one of them. And he never really was interested in politics. He was thought to be a numbskull, thought to be adult, thought to be not very smart, which really isn't fair because I don't know how you get to be a great leader in combat in the Mexican-American War and in the Seminole situation in Florida, as well as opening forts across the Midwest and Northwest at a very difficult time. You know, when the mosquitoes were as big as your hand, literally, in this part of the country, he was out chopping down, you know, trees and building a fort. So I don't know how you can say someone like that is a numbskull if they're commanding and they are the only guy. They're the main guy commanding a group of people who are really cut off from the rest of the world. You have to be pretty tough to be able to do that. And so at the time, people thought of Taylor as being dumb. And his rap in Washington was that he was dumb. And President Polk, who met with him and said that he was dumb. But as I've said before, I've read a couple books, actually, oddly enough, and by accident, on Zachary Taylor. And Zachary Taylor was not dumb. First of all, people don't know this, and I was surprised to see that this guy who wrote the article in Politico really didn't give Taylor enough credit, because Taylor, one of the things that Taylor did is he had this aw shucks, I'm just a dumb general kind of thing going. And one of the things that he would do is wherever he was stationed, he would have correspondence, as he referred to it, sent to him, which included letters from back home, but also included every periodical people could get their hands on to send him. So all during the time this guy was serving in the far reaches of the West that was supposedly cut off from Washington and supposedly not knowing anything about politics, he was reading extensively about politics. He was doing what we do today, which is he was basically going online and reading all about things that were going on. So he was a lot better informed than the people at the time knew, and I'm surprised, because the corollary of this is, gee, this is the same thing that happened in 1845 or something when he ran for president. He was only president for a year and a half or so, and he died of gastro disease, which probably was caused by a bacterial or a viral infection. And he famously consumed a bunch of fruit and what do they call it? Chilled milk at some event in Washington, and died about a month later from this stomach thing that nobody knew what it was. So the cure for it, apparently, is rehydration and rest. And they bled him and they blistered him. And, you know, basically the doctors killed him. So that's, you know, they do the same thing they do today with cancer. They basically kill you. And if you survive the treatment, then you're cured. And if you don't, then you're dead. Anyway, what was I saying? So this idea that the Republican Party is the Whig Party, and it's going to fall apart because Donald Trump is going to be nominated for the presidential, and he's going to run, and even if he wins, it's going to be a disaster, because it was a disaster with Zachary Taylor. I just want to say one more thing about Taylor. He was only president for a year, but he reversed or at least ameliorated the manifest destiny of the United States by signing a treaty with Britain regarding the groundwork for the building of the Panama Canal later, almost 50, 60 years later. He got California admitted as a free state, which was huge. He almost got the Compromise of 1850 passed. He worked very closely with, I think it was Calhoun, on that. And he also very much avoided the use of executive power. So he disagreed with the Whigs in some key areas. He disagreed with Democrats in some key areas. And I think for a guy who was president for a year and a half, he probably is one of the most underrated presidents that we have had. And there's no chance that he'll ever, you know, be rehabilitated. But I think comparing Donald Trump to Taylor, because Taylor had inherited large sums of money, he was the largest slave owner in the country at the time, and he was very wealthy because of his land holdings and plantations across the country because of his family, makes him some corollary to Donald Trump because he was, you know, a rich guy. They didn't nominate him because he was a rich guy. They nominated him because he was a very famous general after the Mexican-American War. In two battles, he acquitted himself brilliantly, and, you know, he was a popular general in the United States. It was a sense of nationalism. He wasn't nominated because he was wealthy. As far as the Whig Party is concerned, you know, here we had a period of time in American history when we really had to decide about the institution of slavery. And the Republicans, in the form of Abraham Lincoln, much later, you know, 10 years later or whatever it was, it was about 10 years later, finally came to grips with this issue of slavery developed, and it came about as the result of the abolitionist movement. We realized we've just got to get rid of this, and the South didn't want to, and, you know, the rest is history. That was something that was developing, and the Whig Party just got lost in all that. And that seems to be the thing to do today. If you don't like a political party, you call it the Whig Party. I can remember being on the radio and comparing the Democrats after Kerry Edwards lost in 2000, whenever it was, 8 to Bush. I remember comparing the Democrats to the Whig Party, that if they didn't get it together, they were going to go the way of the Whig Party. And people were writing about that. And as you recall, Bush got up and said, "I've got a lot of capital, I intend to spend it." Well, you know, he did. And unfortunately, he spent it in ways that have really produced a lot of damage for the Republican Party that we're dealing with today. So coming up, as you know, I've been covering the presidential preference primaries. I always call them the presidential preference primaries because there's a lot of people who think they've been voting for president during this period of time, and you've just been voting at the very most to apportion delegates. And the last primary was held across the country. There were several of them. I could have gone all the way to California, but I decided to just go to South Dakota, specifically to a place called Deadwood, where I ran into an old friend who had moved there and said, "I'm living in the historic preservation district." And I said, "I am coming right over." And we had a great time talking about the history of Deadwood. And I thought we were going to talk more about politics, but after a while, it didn't even really matter because the history of Deadwood is that interesting. Next, to hear more of the Bob Davis Podcast, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show.
Melanie Day, what have I done? Oh, now our hearts are locked up tight again. When I pray, it's all begun. And when you smile, it melts away again.
Okay, just ahead of the last segment of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. I really like these bumpers. I like the music. I'm having a good time with the music in this show. It's different and it's fresh and I really love it. So that's kind of fun. Want to thank once again Brush Studios for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. If you want to show your clients how much you appreciate them, especially in today's diverse world, why not do something new and fun and social? And while your people are doing this new fun social thing, which is basically painting a picture, they're going to be amazed at what they can do. You can socialize with them. Catering from Crave, 22 brands of beer, an extensive wine collection, Brush Studio in the West End St. Louis Park, plenty of parking. Click on the Brush Studios banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page. You can reach out to them at brushstudio.com, 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. and Hydrus. Join the Hydrus Performance Revolution. This is a new high-performance beverage that gets electrolytes into your muscles really, really fast with no sugar, and it will help you take it to the edge. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com, or click on the Hydrus banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page. Hydrus. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Well, you may have seen or heard about the HBO show Deadwood, but have you ever known anyone in the town? What was Deadwood really like back in the day?
Let's talk about why you decided to move to Deadwood, of all places. Because it's funny, because I really like this town. And I was really surprised that you said that you had moved here. So tell me about why you decided to move to Deadwood.
Well, number one, foremost, Lori and I both love the town itself. I mean, we're fascinated by the history. We love the area. We love the people here. It's a complete environmental change from living in Twin Cities. Other practical concerns, the cost of living here is lower than the Twin Cities. They don't tax pensions here. We both have a pension. No personal income tax here.
Woo!
So we can stretch our dollars further here, which is one of the other concerns. And then a lot of people ask us about the weather here. Like, are you trading this off? Well, we lived in Minnesota all our lives. There's just about nothing they can't throw at us here that we haven't already experienced.
Right. It's actually warmer in Alaska most of the winter, unless you're way up in Nome or someplace like that.
But then we just love the area, number one, foremost. I mean, taking into consideration the economic factors, even if you're saving money, if you wake up in a place and you're in some sort of hellhole, no. But here, this is, you've experienced, it's just a very mellow, laid-back sort of town.
And I didn't realize, I guess I knew, but this is like Sturgis 2 up here during Sturgis.
You get
a lot of motorcycles and stuff like that.
Yes. You go down Main Street during Sturgis, and it is literally wall-to-wall bikes.
Wow.
There is no parking.
And this is a tour bus coming down, though.
Yeah, we're right on the route up here to Mount Moriah and Mount Moriah Cemetery, so we'll see tour buses go by a dozen times a day easily. That and as many out-of-state plates as you imagine. Just today, I've seen about a dozen out-of-state plates, Indiana, California. A lot of people come here just to see the local history, Mount Moriah up above us.
How many people live in Deadwood?
About 1,270 last time I checked.
So it's really not a huge town.
No.
And I'm kind of surprised by that. And the other thing is, I was a little taken aback by the number of casinos when I drove into town last night. And you told me this morning that there's actually fewer casinos now than there were.
Yeah, they've been getting hit a little bit by the thing that they're citing they believe doing it has been the decline in the oil shale industry in North Dakota and Wyoming. And I can remember some years ago before we moved here when we were just tourists that if you sat in some of these casinos, it was amazing how many people you saw coming in wearing jackets for different oil shale companies. Today you don't see that.
I didn't see anybody last night. I mean, they were pretty much deserted.
With what's happened between OPEC and the United States, the oil shale industry has taken a shot. Personally, I think OPEC made a huge mistake following the Saudis on that, but that's just my opinion. But it's had an economic impact here on the casinos. But this town will recover. This town's been here 150-some years, and right now, I see where they're just kind of pushing more the tourism because of the history here. I mean, that's something they can't take away from here. The Wild Bill, the mining industry here back in the 70s and 80s, the Victorian period here. And that
was gold mining.
Oh, yeah. Very much gold mining. Matter of fact, this was probably the most profitable gold mine in North America for a long time, the Homestake right up there in Lead, just about 2-3 miles from here and about a mile higher.
And we were just talking about how it was all started by George Custer at a very odd sort of time in U.S. history. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, it was the United States that, now, a lot of people want to see a conspiracy in it, but in 1873, the country had an economic collapse, pretty bad one. On top of that, we were dealing with the debt from the American Civil War. So this collapse takes place, and then curiously, 1874, the United States government decides that it's going to send a military expedition. It was the largest military expedition the United States had staged since the American Civil War, and they were going to go into the Black Hills with about a reinforced regiment, about 1,500 men. And it was underneath command of one George Armstrong Custer. Now, mind you, this was after we had had a treaty we had signed with the Lakota and Cheyenne Nations, or most of the Lakota and Cheyenne Nations, in 1868 at Fort Laramie. And we had agreed with them that we were going to stay out of the Black Hills. It was, for the Indian nations, considered a holy site. It was a sacred location. Well, we went in nominally with the purpose of trying to find a place to build a fort there so we could better police the Black Hills. We were allowed by treaty to send in the military for that. But no, they went. Yeah, they went in with a lot of miners, a couple of geologists, and they discovered gold up by French Creek. And once that news got out, initially the government didn't want it to get out, but didn't take long. They found out there was gold here, and that started the flood. Deadwood was a direct result of that.
So everybody knows the show. In fact, I was shocked at the number of people, and I've only watched two or three Deadwoods, you know. I got a little tired. Is it Al Swearingen?
Swearingen, yeah.
Who's the guy that plays him?
Ian McShane.
Yeah, I got a little tired of Ian McShane. He kind of chews up the scenery a little bit. But in any case, everybody says, oh, you're going to Deadwood. Is it like the TV show? So you said that there's actually a lot of differences between things. You know, people weren't being massacred in the streets and things of that nature.
No, they played up the bloodshed more than it actually was. I mean, it was a rough town. There's no doubt about it.
Miners.
Yeah, and it had more than its share of disasters of one sort or another. Matter of fact, the town was completely destroyed in 1879 by one fire. Though, curiously, that fire that knocked down, I believe, burned down about 300 buildings, only killed one person. And legend has it that they rebuilt by some of them by looking through the ashes and finding the gold in the dust.
But you're saying that even the sheriff, the legendary sheriff that's portrayed in the show, Deadwood, never carried a sidearm on a holster, Wild West style. And I'm going to paraphrase you because in the interest of I don't want to spend too much time, but you said this isn't Tombstone. You know, this is a different kind of a structure here. Tombstone is a much later, people didn't carry sidearms all the time.
Well, they actually had ordinances after about 79. I don't know the exact date, but they basically didn't want open carry. They didn't want people carrying weapons around. Now, mind you, they did.
Sure. Just like today.
Yeah, there were shootings. There was some violence. The thing is, I have only found evidence of a couple of gunfights that ever actually happened in the streets, and they were not like the Hollywood gunfights. In one case I found record of, it was basically two drunks got pushed out in the street and opened fire on each other. They were more danger to the bystanders than each other.
What was the thing the sheriff used to do if people wanted to have a gunfight? That my favorite thing that you said?
Yeah, the legend has it that Seth Bullock could stop a lot of stuff just by he had a hell of a stare, let's just put it that way. But I did find one legend where allegedly he told a couple that wanted to have a gunfight that he'd prefer them to move it to the cemetery. And when they asked by, he said, well, that just makes it easier for all of us.
Because we can bury whoever loses the gunfight pretty quick.
There's a lot of legend lore around some of the characters here. And in some of them, like the character that Ian McShane plays, Al Swearingen, I don't know of one good photo of him. We know what Seth looked like. We know what a lot of other characters look like. We have no idea what Al Swearingen actually looked like. Matter of fact, the only picture I've ever seen that reputedly is him is of a carriage in front of what was at that time his establishment, but you can't make him out in it very well.
Now, it was primary day in South Dakota the day I was there, so what would any primary coverage be without the man on the street interview? In this case, the woman on the street interview with someone who just voted.
Politics in Deadwood reflects the politics in the nation and every place else, so it's very polarized.
Still, really? So yeah. This isn't a bunch of nice people that are just fun disagreements.
Well, when you live in a village, nice people become real people. And, you know, people are the same every place.
Yeah.
So this has been kind of a difficult lead up to an election. So,
how do you feel about being the last state?
Well, yeah, but I'm originally from South Dakota, and I left for a while, and I got to vote earlier, but it was always decided before it got here.
Yeah.
But I still try.
Yeah. Well, so you could have all that attention that the Iowans get, but,
Well, we don't have a population anyway.
Yeah.
We're not going to decide the whole election. I'd like to.
Yeah. Many of us would like to as well.
Yeah,
why don't they just leave it empty for 4 years and just say, we're renovating, we don't need a president. Let's just skip this.
Yeah, but every now and then they do. I read a lot of history.
Every now and then you need a president.
Well, yeah, but there are times that we put people in there that are just figureheads or a negative effect. So, and we've survived it.
Yeah.
So 4 years without, we might survive that too. We might learn to get along.
Thanks again to Brad and Lori in Deadwood. That's going to do it for this installment of the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show.
It could be a spoonful of diamond. Could be a spoonful of gold. Just a little spoon of your precious love.
All right, that's it. That's the show for this week. You know, I'm posting this podcast, this show for this week on the 11th of June, which is the birthday of someone very special to the Bob Davis Podcasts, the general manager of the Bob Davis Podcast, my mom, who is 94 today. And she is never fails to be an inspiration and has always been an inspiration to me since I was a kid. She would always tell me to do something creative. She would always tell me to follow my heart. And she would always tell me to go ahead and do it. And I've always appreciated that and never forgotten that. I'm not big on cards. And I'm not big on presents, so I just want to thank the general manager of the BobDavisPodcasts.com for all the support and not just in this project, but throughout my whole life. So happy birthday, Mom. And thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. And also thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, I'm at Bob Davis Podcasts. On Instagram, I'm the Bob Davis Podcasts. And I also appreciate your donations at the BobDavisPodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command. Got to take it in for an oil change. So appreciate, any kind of contribution really helps for taking that thing out on the road. I'm not sure where I'm going to go next. I think it'll be the air show, but we'll see. So that's all coming up in the future. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast 511, the radio show for this week.